Thanks for joining us on an abbreviated Thursday morning edition of the Locked On Nets podcast. We are talking players number 20 through 16 in our hashtag Atlantic Division rank. Me and Josh differed a little bit on this, so there's some healthy debate in there. And again, this is a little bit of a shorter episode because we initially recorded it as part of one big one, but it ran a little bit long, so we're keeping it to this. And then we'll come back later in the week, talk about Nets training camp, and finish up our rankings. For now, enjoy.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
We are back, and it is time, hashtag Atlantic Division rank. You wanted it. We're giving it. We are talking the number 20. Through the number 15. All right, should we do 16? Let's do 16. Number 20 through number... Sorry?
20 through 16.
Yeah, 20 through 16. Let's do 20 through 16, the best players in the Atlantic Division. All right, Josh, let's start it off. You have, at number 20, Damari Carroll.
Yep, Damari, our good old friend. I think he had a nice year last year, kind of recoup some of his value after a couple seasons in Toronto where he was completely banged up. Still a pretty good defender, great hustle player, does a lot of the little things that are just huge for a team. Like he'll steal the ball after another team gets a rebound, playing the passing lanes. I think he's a useful player, shot 37% from three last year, did a great job of getting to the line, career high in free throw attempts, and he's still a useful player. I mean, he's not going to take anything off the table for you. I think that's been a big theme here in as we get down to 16 and the 16 to 25 range. Just guys who are going to be pretty much average to above average in all aspects of the game. And I think Damari Carroll is a perfect encapsulation of that.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. And his plus-minus numbers, again, you could certainly make the argument that he was the best player on the Nets last year. So I'm going to be transparent in this. At number 19, you have D'Lo. I completely forgot to put him on my list, and I just realized this. So, I am like you, a D'Lo hater, but it is not to that degree. So I'll apologize. We'll get to him in just a second. But my number 20 was another Atlantic Division point guard, Fred VanVleet. The guy was kind of a phenomenon last year. I loved him coming out of Wichita State. I thought that whole team. With guys like Cle Anthony. Why am I forgetting his last name? He's on the Knicks. He got shot. Cle Anthony Early. Ron Bakker, who is not very good, but still is making money in the NBA because Phil Jackson went out of his way and gave away Jimmy Dolan's money to continue to support the unathletic white guy thriving in the NBA. But VanVleet, out of the three, legitimately good point guard, extremely intelligent, cagey, a gamer, takes on all the cliches in the book. He's just far ahead of his years, and I think he was really the engine of the Raptors bench unit that was most likely the best in the NBA last year. So a big time shout out to Fred VanVleet. I think he's going to be a relevant NBA role player for a long time. I'd love for him to end up on my Knicks at some point. He is really, really good. That is the highest compliment I can pay him.
Yeah, so I love Fred VanVleet. I had him at actually number 16 on my list. I think he had a huge year, shot 41% from three. Really just a solid player, very good passer. Just another guy that's a pretty good defender for being so small in stature. He's just an awesome player. Toronto was 9 points better when he was on the court, 56% true shooting. I guess the one weakness he has a little bit is his field goals percentage. Funny enough, 41% from three, 57% at the rim, which is very good for someone who doesn't have a lot of size or explosion like he does. But his huge weakness, which you would think, is really 0-3, 24% from the field, and 10-16 only shot 5% from the field. And it wasn't a huge diet of his attempts, but it's still pretty alarming. But yeah, he's a great player. I would expect him to get more than 20 minutes a game this year because I think they're going to be playing a lot of two-guard lineups with Kyle Lowry, and seeing that Kawhi is much more of a true forward than DeRozan is, I think that Fred VanVleet should probably get upwards of 25 minutes a game, and he's going to be a very good player for a long time, and Toronto definitely got a steal with him.
All right, at 19, and I again forgot to rank him, you had our guy, D'Angelo Russell. What went into that? And you put him behind, you put him six spots behind Spencer Dinwiddie, seven spots behind J.J. Redick. I'll stop there. What went into it?
Yeah, I mean, the reason he's so far behind those guys is just because of he's a very big liability on defense, but I think 19's a fair ranking. I mean, I thought about having him lower, but I also didn't want – I'm already such a hater as is. I didn't want to be any more of one. He was very good when we looked at the first 12 games or so last year. I think that it's kind of unfair because it might be the system that the Nets are running when he's on the court, but his usage is just astronomical, over 30% usage. No players besides James Harden types. So maybe his efficiency would increase a little bit more in this Nets system if he wasn't being used so much. I mean, we can argue whether that's because he's not as willing a passer as he should be, but I think that just given his talent level and what he could be this year if he has a healthy season and puts it all together, I wanted to bump him up a couple spots to 19. I think that's a pretty reasonable ranking.
Yeah, I have Karras at 16 and Dinwiddie at 15. I don't really know how to parse those three, and obviously it was a big debate with us last year, like, do you take D'Lo's offensive upside over Dinwiddie's steadiness, or do you take Karras, who's kind of, I would say, somewhere in between both of them on that metric? Like, I'm not really sure how to rank those three guys. I think if I had to do it right now, I might put D'Lo third, just because of what you said, like him being such a dramatic defensive liability. Like, even if on the surface he's the most spectacular and he's the most obviously talented of those three guys, like, I think he is the greatest cumulative negative effect, and like the advanced stats back that up, at least right now. And but if he can really just make, like, not even like a dramatic jump to being good or great on that end, but just being decent, I think it's very plausible he ends up being the best player out of those three guys and the best player on the Brooklyn Nets next season. All right, at number 19, I had our guy Jarrett Allen. I know he didn't make the top 25 for you, and I understand that, obviously relatively unproven compared to everyone else on this list, but I think he was second in the NBA in field goal percentage last year, and obviously that was a lot of alley-oops, a lot of dunks, a lot of baby hooks, but I'm just a big believer in his touch around the rim, the fact that he got stronger, the fact that he really just does not have a long history playing basketball at this point, and he was still as good as he was his first season in the NBA, just makes me think that he could potentially make a dramatic leap in his second season, and he is one of the highest ceilings of anyone on this list. So I went somewhere kind of down the middle, slotted him at 19. I think there's a chance he ends up being a little bit higher than this. There's a chance he doesn't quite belong on this list yet. So I went down the middle, put him at 19. Peak ticket season in New York is fast approaching, and we know that you want to be a part of it. The NFL is in full swing. The Yankees are getting ready for a playoff run. And hockey and basketball are just around the corner. And there's no better option to get a great deal on attending any of those events than Vivid Seats. Vivid Seats allows you to sort by price or look for seats in the section and row of your choice. To make things even better, Vivid Seats is giving listeners an exclusive promo code for $20 off orders of $200 or more to save you even more money. Go to the App Store or Google Play and download the Vivid Seats app. Then use promo code LOCKEDON for $20 off orders of $200 or more. Every purchase is backed by a 100% buyer guarantee. From the biggest concerts and games to the hottest theater and more, Vivid Seats has it all. Download the app and enter promo code LOCKEDON for $20 off orders of $200 or more. That's LOCKEDON. Make a memory that lasts a lifetime and let Vivid Seats help you get to your favorite live event.
Yeah, I think if when we're doing this list a year from now and nothing has changed in either of our lives, I think that Jared Allen will probably be in the top 20, but again, just hasn't proven enough for me to have him on this list yet, jinx him, but I would assume he'll be there next year.
Right. No, and he certainly has that upside. All right, 18 is really easy for once. We do acknowledge this could have potentially been more efficient if we had come to a consensus, but we didn't on most players. We did on number 18, Jonas Valanciunas. I think that's exactly the right spot for him. He's a guy who has made leaps and bounds as a scorer in the NBA, is one of the more efficient semi-high-volume guys in the league, and is frankly just unstoppable around the rim, especially in the league, going in a direction where it's smaller and smaller and smaller, and in a lot of ways is kind of a low-grade center version of what D'Angelo Russell brings to the table. He has offensive highs, and defensively, he's not quite as harmful as D'Angelo Russell because he's still big and can kind of put his hands up around the rim, but is obviously not very good in that area. But he just had so many impressive stretches in even the playoffs when the Raptors were struggling. He was a guy who could make plays for them and score. So I really like the improvements he made last year, and I think slotting him in at 18 does him justice at this point in his career.
No, I don't have comparisons unfair to Jonas because D'Angelo Russell isn't an efficient scorer whatsoever. I mean, Jonas Valanciunas was 63% true shooting last year on 23% usage. That's pretty awesome. He reminds me a lot of Brooke Lopez in the sense that a lot of times he gets off to a super hot start, will drop 12 or 15 points in the first quarter or first half even, and then it's tough for him to get the ball in the second half because it's hard for big guys to get the ball in the second half in general when games get tight. But he needs to find better ways to get off his shot. And obviously, as a defensive player, he is kind of being phased out of the game. He's not, doesn't have the foot speed to really get out on the perimeter and guard guys. Not the best interior defender either. So I like Jonas a lot, but he is a bit of a limited player. So I think it makes sense that we both have him at 18.
Yeah, and I think we've talked a lot on this podcast about the offense-only big man becoming the new like microwave guard off the bench in the NBA. And even though Jonas is nominally a starter for Toronto, I think that is generally his role at this point because obviously he wasn't a part of those finishing lineups that were so effective for them last season. And this year, I would expect a lot of Serge Ibaka and Pascal Siakam alongside Kyle Lowry, Kawhi Leonard, and then either Danny Green or OG Anunoby. There are really just like a ton of ways they can go, and their defense is going to be scary this year, so they'll be able to.
Jonas's numbers could actually really improve a lot because without Poeltl there, he could be seeing a good bulk of the center minutes. I mean, averaged 22 minutes a game last year and dropped 13 points and 9 rebounds. So imagine what he would do with 28 minutes a game.
Yeah,
the possibilities are endless.
For sure. That's going to be interesting. And I'm wondering, there are so many different directions they can go and so many lineups that they can put out that are all defense or so defensively oriented that like you can survive playing someone like Jonas on that end because the perimeter defenders are going to be so effective that he's not really going to hurt you. All right, at number 17, I had Serge Ibaka, who we talked about quite a bit on last podcast, so I don't really need to feel the need to go into him all that more. But yeah, he was sneakily good last season, shot the ball really well, 48% from the field, 36% from three. And again, he's going to be a part of those groups. I'm interested to see if they finish games next season with him at center, or if they try and move Pascal Siakam up to center, or they play both of them together. Like I'm just intrigued by the different combinations there because both those guys can protect the rim and shoot the ball a little bit.
Yep, we're really going in depth on the Raptors big man situation.
All right, so let's switch to a
Boston Raptors. Call him up, Sean Woodley.
Our guy. Wow, I can't believe you just pulled that name out. I'm impressed.
This is a deep pull.
Yeah. All right. Wow. Yeah. That was like the third episode I ever recorded was with our guy Sean. All right. Well, let's switch it up to Celtics point guards. Then you have Terry Rozier at number 17. Obviously, the kind of the breakout star of the opening round of the NBA playoffs last year. Torched Eric Bledsoe at points, wasn't quite as good against Philly, and then was generally pretty bad against Cleveland. Like LeBron took advantage of him on defense. Offensively, they let him shoot as much as he wanted, and he was a big part of the reason they got shot out of game 7. I think he went like 1 for 11 on threes or something like insane. But overall, really, really good last year. And this year, with Kyrie Irving back and allegedly the healthiest he's ever been, he's going to get to play a little bit of a smaller role, and I think do what he should and be one of the better backup point guards in basketball.
Yep, love what I saw out of Scary Terry this year. Had a really nice year shooting the three ball, 38% from three in the regular season on 5 attempts a game. So that was a huge part of his game. Obviously exploded in the playoffs, averaged 17 points, 5 rebounds, 6 assists. He's a very dynamic defender that he can get a lot of steals. The one weakness in his game, I'd say, is that he does not get to the free throw line a lot for a player of his athleticism. Averaged 2 free throw attempts a game in the regular season, only 3 in the playoffs, and when he had a ton of usage. So you'd think that'd be a bit higher, but very low turnover player. Obviously a flawed player, but someone that is an excellent backup point guard, probably the best in the league, right up there with Fred VanVleet, and is a guy that I could see developing into the core in Boston as kind of a six-man type, someone who's beloved by the crowd, especially if they eventually decide to part ways with Marcus Smart as trade bait, when guys like Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown need big contracts also.
All right, that is a great way to wrap up this edition of Locked On Nets. Next time out, not sure about everything we're going to be talking about, but we will definitely be continuing with hashtag Atlantic Division Ranks, so follow along for that. You can get Josh on Twitter at jmbass_, if I remember correctly. I never remember your Twitter. I'm sorry, Josh. All right, I am at Gavin Scholl. You can follow the podcast at Locked On Nets. We're going to make an effort to tweet more this year. I said that all of last year. It was kind of a running joke. This year, we are actually planning on doing it, so stick with us, Locked On Nets.